Ecclesiastes chapter 6. There is an evil which I have seen under the sun, and it is common among men. A man to whom God hath given riches, wealth, and honor, so that he wanteth nothing for his soul out of all that he desireth, yet God giveth him not power to eat thereof, but a stranger eateth it. This is vanity. It is an evil disease. If a man beget 100 children and live many years, so that the days of his years be many, and his soul be not filled with good, and also that he have no burial, I say that an untimely birth is better than he. For he cometh in with vanity and departeth in darkness, and his name shall be covered with darkness. Moreover, he hath not seen the sun, nor known anything. This hath more rest than the other. Interesting turn of phrase there. Yea, though he live 1,000 years twice told, yet hath he seen no good. Do not all go to one place. All the labor of man is for his mouth, and yet the appetite is not filled. For what hath the wise more than the fool? What hath the poor that knoweth to walk before the living? Better is the sight of the eyes than the wandering of the desire. This is also vanity and vexation of spirit. That which hath been is named already, and it is known that it is man. Neither may he contend with him that is mightier than he, seeing there be many things that increase vanity. What is man the better? For who knoweth what is good for man in his life, all the days of his vain life which he spendeth as a shadow? Or who can tell a man what shall be after him under the sun? Ecclesiastes chapter 6. The book of Ecclesiastes is about living. About living life to the fullest. And as you've heard, you know, 12 times already, it talks about life under the sun, meaning a life without God, or at least without an acknowledgement of God or His working in our lives. Any one of us is capable of all these things. The 6th chapter of Ecclesiastes marks a bit of a turning point in this sermon out of all that Solomon has learned. It's kind of a turning point because he starts to really turn inside and start to push towards the mark where he's supposed to be in the first place. He was truly the most privileged man to ever live, if you think about it. He literally had it all. And frankly, it's not hard to envy him at some point, if you really think about it. It's not hard to do that. He had riches, honor, position. He had as many women as his heart desired. He had it all. And yet he wasn't satisfied. He hated his life. Here he begins to focus a little more closely on the problem. Look in the last verse, verse 12. For who knoweth what is good for man in this life, all the days of his vain life which he spendeth as a shadow? For who can tell a man what shall be after him under the sun? The idea is that we need to learn, we need to live, we need to enjoy the concept that who comes before what. You'll hear me repeat this over and over. Who comes before what? The who is more important than the what. Anyone who's any part of any kind of ministry, anyone in ministry, anyone who serves God people, should be able to tell you the same thing. The miracle is not that I'm in ministry, or that I minister, or that I serve, or that I teach. You know, in my case, it's teaching and discipleship and whatever else the Lord provides. The miracle is not that I'm doing it. The miracle is that I actually want to serve Him. When you consider what we really are deep down inside, the miracle is that I actually want to serve Him. God has put it in our hearts the desire to serve Him, to serve God's people. You know, too many times when we're counseling and whatnot, we've made a mistake on focusing on the what. What should I do? Who should I marry? Where should I go? What ministry should I be a part of? You know, we've often tried to answer these questions without focusing on what should be the answer to all of these questions. You know, you don't worry about that now. Don't worry about that now. Just focus on knowing Him. Just focus on knowing Jesus Christ. The more time you spend getting to know Him, the more time you spend with Him, the easier it will be to know the what. That personal time spent with God will give direction, will give purpose. Spending time with God will give you direction, focus, and encouragement. We need to tell people who ask that we do not have the answers, but we know who does. The who always comes before the what. The who is the preeminent. The who is most important. God brings us to a person. Think about this. God brings us to a person. Yeah. I missed a slide already. I'm having one of those mornings, so just bear with me. We'll try not to get you caught up in the carnage. I'm having one of those days. God brings us to a person. You have seen what I didn't. You guys remember this when I taught on the eagles. I love that lesson. You have seen what I did unto the Egyptians, how I bare you on eagle's wings and brought you unto myself. In Exodus 19, God is speaking to the nation of Israel about taking them out of bondage and getting them to the promised land. And in this passage is a very, very precious thought. He was not taking them to a place. He was not taking them to a geographical location. And really, this is a very, very common mistake that we all make. You know, some of you may be in a very, very unlikely place. You could be in a place of affliction, of suffering, or want, or need, or something like that. You may be there. You may even be in a place of great blessing. You need to think beyond the place that you're at now. There is a bigger picture here. It's not the place that God has called you to. It's to a person, to himself. Verse 4 says, "You have seen what I did to the Egyptians." You know, we read how God broke the yoke of the Egyptian bondage. You know, after all the plagues that he delivered upon Egypt, God delivered his people. He brought them to the Red Sea and rid himself of the Egyptians at the same time. Very nice move, by the way. But verse 4 continues, "And how I bare you on eagle's wings and brought you unto myself." Everything else at that time was relatively meaningless. God was bringing them from a bad situation to a place where they could get to know him, get to be with him, to get to serve him. The Lord said he brought them not to a place, but unto himself. Now, God has brought me to the place I presently am, where I presently serve him, in order that I may be closer to him. You know, wherever you are, whatever you're doing, the circumstances are not nearly as important as we've made them out to be. I've got that same sentence in there twice. You gotta love that. And I caught it. You gotta like that. There is hope. Anyway, the general idea is God is working in each of our lives to bring us closer to him. You know, many of God's children, you know, on the front side of suffering before anything ever happens. You know, we say, you know, I wouldn't want to go through something like that. I couldn't imagine ever getting through that. I couldn't handle that. I couldn't deal with it. There's no way I can possibly get through it. But on the other side, when it's all done, all said and done, and God brings them through it, they rejoice and they can thank God for that time. Because God brought them through it. Because they got to know God better through it. They got to understand their own faith better through it. God used it in their lives to make them better, to make them closer to him. They're able to see God work in their lives and learn something about God through that experience. They can rejoice and thank God for it. It caused them to draw closer to him. Afterwards, they can look back on it as a special thing that they shared with God. Now, with all those thoughts in mind, what we do is not as important as who God is. Click. Look in these verses. "Trust in the Lord and do good, and so shalt thou dwell in the land, and verily thou shalt be fed. Delight thyself also in the Lord, and he shall give thee the desires of thine heart." You'll see, it's always a relationship first, the time with God first. Focus on God first. Then all these things will follow. I got to make sure I don't lose my place here. "Commit thy way unto the Lord, trust also in him, and he shall bring it to pass." The who always comes first, then the what. This verse everybody knows. Every new Christian learns this one. "Trust in the Lord with all thine heart, and lean not unto thine own understanding." And this verse, this does it twice. "And in all thy ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct thy paths." Trust in the Lord first. Get that relationship square first. "In all thy ways acknowledge him." God first. God always first. That's the way it works. The time with God, the understanding of God, the time spent with him always comes first. "In all thy ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct thy paths." I mean, let's be honest with each other. You know, what we want to do is direct our own paths. We all do. It's just the way we are. It's human nature. What we want to know is what we should do, where we should go. This is all concerns us. Just point me in the right direction and off I go. Boom, 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 boom. It's human nature. We don't have the patience or what it takes to actually wait on God and to learn of Him first. It turns out to me this is what usually overwhelms us in the end. You start looking at things and getting understanding of what's coming or whatever, and it's just like, it makes you crazy. But God says, no. Trust in me. Lean on me. I will do the directing. Spend time with me first. And then we can work on getting you pointed in the right direction of where you need to go or what you need to do. You know, there have been many times that I've worried and fretted about what's going to happen. I've been consumed with trying to figure out the next steps. And what are we going to do about this? And what are we going to do about that? I know in my life now, I'm sitting there wondering, you know, is the Lord going to let me retire anytime soon? Because I'm eligible to retire. I can do this. Right now, I'm practically working for less than minimum wage because of what I could be getting in retirement. You know, we went on vacation down the south of Myrtle Beach last year, and we fell in love with the place, and I love to move there. I would do it today. I would pack the truck and go today. But, you know, these things, it's like you're constantly, I'm waiting on this, you know, I've been eligible to retire for like a year and a half now, and it's like, you know, Lord, come on, I need something here. I need something. tell me where, away we go. And it's just like, you know, it's interesting how the Lord just says, sit back and wait. There's something going on that you can't see. There's something here that you can't understand. Just trust in me. Take your time. We will get you there. And we'll get you there in one piece if you let me direct. You know, I just need to trust Him and trust whatever He brings to pass is the best thing for me. There's no reason to worry. There's no reason to sweat. What we do is not as important as who God is. Our time with God must precede our service to Him. All those verses said the same thing. It was focused on God first and then something. And God first and then something. That's the process. That's the growth. That's the way it needs to be. In Mark chapter 3, Jesus called all the disciples unto Himself and gave them a great job to do. And He goeth up into a mountain and calleth unto Him whom He would. And they came unto Him, and He ordained 12 that they should be with Him and that He might send them forth to preach. Notice that He didn't send them out right away. It was of paramount importance that He spend time with them first. They needed to be prepared for what God had in store for them. They would go out there blind, and they needed to be prepared for what God had for them. They must spend time with God first. You know, that's a big problem with people in the ministry. You know, we, you and I, and, you know, all of us here, we come here to worship. We come here to be part of God's family and to do what God has brought us here to do. People in ministry come here to work. Every day, they show up for work, they get up, they show up for work. And it's so easy to get involved in the activities of the ministry and forget the Lord of the ministry. It's a very, very easy thing to do. Especially at church, especially the size that we're getting to be. There's always something to do. There's always somebody to see. There's always somebody to call. There's always something going on. It's easy to get tied up in all the little details of what's going on and forget the Lord that's behind all of it. And it can happen in families, too. You get so busy with schoolwork and after-school activities, and you spend no really, really good time with your family. It's human nature. It's like I taught last time. It's very easy to fall into the trap of what's here and what's now is important. I've got to do this, I've got to do that, I've got to do this, I've got to do that. Get it done. And what we need to really just back off and understand is that the Lord is at the center of all this stuff. If it needs to be done, He will get me there and help me get it done. Let Him direct. Next, what we have is not as important as who God is. Read verse 1 again here, Ecclesiastes chapter 6. There is an evil which I have seen under the sun, and it is common among men. It is evil. It is common. It is ordinary. It happens to everyone. And what is this common evil? Verse 2. A man to whom God hath given riches, wealth, and honor, so that he wanteth nothing for his soul out of all that he desireth, yet God giveth him not power to eat thereof. But a stranger eateth it. This is vanity. It is an evil disease. Man, you can have it all. Riches, wealth, honor, all the pleasures of this life. But if God is not your first love, you're focused. If he is not your best relationship, if he is not number one where he needs to be, all those other things can become a curse. They can become a curse. They can become the problem. You can have all the lovers or pleasures that you have ever dreamed about. And you know what? You will still wake up and look in the mirror in the morning and wonder, why am I not happy? You know, there are a lot of Christians who never bother to read the Old Testament and stuff, and I keep saying, it's everyday life played out, you know, with real people's lives every day. This is why Solomon's story is in here, to teach us these truths. You know, all of us kind of wish for more, wish for this, wish for that. I would love to retire. I would love to move someplace warm and sunny where I can go out to the beach, walk out to the beach from my house and fish every day and do all that stuff like that. And you know what? There are other things that are more important. Why am I not happy? You know, why do you think there's so many problems with alcohol and drugs and sexual sins and abuse? Because people's lives are empty and vain. They need something. What they need is Christ. You know, this is why one of the reasons that, you know, God doesn't take us home right away, because there are people here who need to understand that, who need to know that. You know, but as usual, they look elsewhere first. They need Christ, but they look somewhere else first. Look at verse 3. If a man beget 100 children and live many years, so that the days of his years be many, and his soul be not filled with good, and also that he have no burial, I say that his untimely birth is better than he. Some people, women especially, but some people think that they can find happiness and true fulfillment in having a family. This is natural. This is human. This is something we look forward to all our lives until we get there. Afterwards, we're not so thrilled about it. Not always so thrilled about it. But this is something natural. This is normal. This is human nature. Until our children are viewed as gifts from God and viewed as a God-given ministry and a God-given responsibility, then those children will be a burden and not blessings. That thing that you always aspired for, that you put on and made an idol out of, they will be burdens and not a blessings. This verse says you can have 100 children and wrap up your life completely in them, and you will not be fulfilled. There will be no joy. You look at the verse again, verse 3. If a man beget 100 children and live many, many years, he can live forever. In fact, that's what it says. With no burial, you can live forever. So that the days of his years be many, and his soul be not filled with good, and also that he have no burial. I say that an untimely birth is better than he. You can have 100 children and never die. Have family forever. Forever. And Solomon says that you are no better off than an untimely birth. An untimely birth is stillborn. Born dead. It happens. You are better off being born dead and going straight to heaven than living forever with all the family that you can want. This is the analogy he's drawing here. You know, we have this problem with the young people all the time. They come out of their teenage years, you know, usually at odds with their parents, trying to find their way in the world. They're unsettled, ill at ease. And they get the idea in their head, they only meet and marry the right person, my life can be complete. I can be fulfilled. I can be fulfilled. Just think about that. And eventually they learn that it doesn't work. There is only one way to be complete and fulfilled. It is in your relationship with Jesus Christ. And ye are, speaking of Jesus, and ye are complete in him. If you never get married, never had a family, were divest of all your other relationships. If you have Christ, you have everything that you need to be, not just to exist, which is what we all think about when we think of this, not just to exist, but to be happy, to fulfilled, to have joy, to be in the center of God's will. All you need is Him. Another person can complete you. Colossians chapter 3, when Christ, who is our life, shall appear, then shall ye also appear with Him in glory. As a born-again child of God, Christ is your life. There's another verse in the book of Acts that I truly love. No, it's not. It's Abraham in the book of Genesis. Oh, and I just went completely blank. I'm having a blonde moment. Anyway, it just says that, you know, He is basically our environment. He is our environment. He is the air we breathe and everything. And to live outside of His will, to live outside of Christ, is like a fish living out of water. He is truly our life. And we cannot know joy or fulfillment or anything outside of that relationship. If you're not, it says, as a born-again child, like I said, Christ is your life. If you are not, if He is not your life, then you're living in disobedience to this verse. If you cannot say, Christ is my life, you are living in disobedience to this verse. Both of these verses have been from the book of Colossians, where Paul emphasizes the place for Christ in a person's life. And He is the head of the body, the church, who is the beginning, the firstborn from the dead, that in all things He might have preeminence. Not just on this planet, not just in this world, not just in the universe, but this is also your life too. Christ must have preeminence. He must be first above all things. He truly is the only thing that matters. Back to Ecclesiastes chapter 6, verse 3. If a man beget 100 children and live many years, at the very end, he says, then an untimely birth is better than he. Verse 4. For he cometh in with vanity and departeth in darkness, and his name shall be covered with darkness. Comes and goes without any notice. Right? Verse 5. Moreover, he hath not seen the sun, nor known anything. This hath more rest than the other. Lives no life. Knows nothing. They were talking about the untimely birth. Comes and goes in darkness. Lives no life. Knows nothing. This hath more rest than the other. The guy who lives forever, has all the family and stuff that he wants, all the kids and stuff that he wants. The untimely birth has more rest than he does. A person that spends his life without God in the rightful place. A know nothing, nobody, stillborn, child, still has more rest. Is in a better place. Is in a better place with God than this guy. The only rest we can possibly find is when we rest in Christ and give Him His rightful place in our lives. The only rest there is to be found is in someone, not in something. Verse 7. All the labor of man is for his mouth, and yet the appetite is not filled. All we do is live to eat, eat to live. This is your typical life. For verse 8, for what hath the wise more than the fool, who hath the poor, what hath the poor that knoweth to walk before the living? The wise and the fool, and the poor and the rich, they both have to work to eat. And in either case, rich or poor, you never really satisfy your appetites. You never really do. How many times have you eaten? It could be a huge meal, only be hungry a couple hours later. Everything in this world is just so temporal, just so temporal. And all appetites are like that, whatever they be. All appetites are like that. They are never truly satisfied. You know, they talk about a man in New York who digs a ditch to get the money, to get the food, to get the strength, to dig the ditch. It could be sales, it could be hard labor, you could be busting yourself every day, computer tech, it doesn't really matter what it is. Your life is going in circle to get the money, to get the food, to get the strength, to dig the ditch, to get the money, to get the food. You're living your life in circles. You must surrender your life and live for a greater purpose. You must. There is something that is bigger than you. And believe it or not, there is actually something that's more important than you. You must surrender to Him. You must live for Him. Look at verse 9. Better is the sight of the eyes than the wandering of the desires. This also is vanity and vexation of spirit. Better is the sight of the eyes. It's better to understand what is now, where you are at, what you are doing, and give it to God first. Some people, actually most people actually, have a way of following their wandering desires. They're never satisfied and they're constantly looking to try to fulfill themselves outside of God's will. Always seeking to get the new thing, to get the latest and greatest. You know, like I'm like technology. I'm as a woman at work. Every time a new gadget comes out, she has it just like that. She always, you know, justifies it with some excuse, but she always has the newest and latest and greatest. I'd love to be one of her grandkids, because that's who gets all the other stuff. When a new one comes out, the other one goes to a grandkid somewhere. It's just, that's crazy. It really is. You get what you want, and guess what? You're still not happy. You're still not satisfied. Because you're trying to find fulfillment, to find joy, to find acceptance outside of your relationship with Jesus Christ. You can have all the latest and greatest, and you're just not going to find it. Look at verse 11. Seeing that there be many things that increase vanity, what is man the better? There's always something more to get. More, more, more. Gotta have it, gotta have it. More, more, more. And they all increase vanity, increase emptiness, restlessness. You know, how are you better by chasing all of these things? You really think about it. How are you better? Verse 10. That which hath been is named already, and it is known that it is vain. Or that it is man. Same thing. Neither may he contend with him that is mightier than he. You know, your past is your past, whatever it is. Get over it and give it to God. He's the only one that can do anything with it. And when it comes to opinions of anybody, his opinion is the only one that matters. It truly is. But there must be a point of surrender first. There really must be. Verse 12. For who can tell? For who knoweth what is good for man in this life all the days of his vain life which he spendeth as a shadow? For who can tell a man what shall be after him under the sun? So who can tell? Who knows what tomorrow holds? Not me. It's definitely not me. But I do know who holds the future. And if you are a child of God, you do too. We need to surrender it to him. The who is more important than anything else. God must be preeminent. It has always been God's desire that we know him, that we learn of him, that we pursue him. There's a famous book in Christian circles called The Pursuit of God. God desires that we pursue after him deliberately. Deliberately get to know him. It has always been God's priority that his people would get to know them. Jesus himself pled with us, practically begged, take my yoke upon you and learn of me. Get to know me. Get to understand me. Care about me. Care about what I think. Get to know me. The Apostle Paul is the same way. He wrote one of the most excellent verses in the Bible, Philippians chapter 3, that I may know him and the power of his resurrection and the fellowship of his sufferings being made conformable unto death, that I may know him. You have no higher calling in the Christian life, whether you're the janitor here or the pastor or anybody really. You have no higher calling. Nothing in your life is anywhere near as important as knowing God. Pursuing God. It must be first before anything else. Nothing else you will do will have purpose or make sense or work in God's favor until you do that first. It is God's will that you learn of him. Spend time with him. You know, we practically beg new converts. Pray every day. Read your Bible every day. Spend time with God. Get to know him. Get to understand him. Get to know what he likes. Get to like what he likes. Get to know what he hates. Get to hate what he hates. Get to know God. Pursue him. Try to understand him. And then make him the focus of your life. Make him the focus of your energy and your pursuit. This is the paramount importance in the Christian life. The who is more important than the what. Who is more important than anything else? Focus on God first and everything else will follow.